Chapter 55. A long hallway led to an elevator with no interior controls. Once both men were inside, Admiral Natal gave a voice authorization that got the car moving. It descended to a floor several stories below ground level before stopping. When the elevator doors opened, they entered a dimly lit hallway with stainless steel walls. A checkpoint at the front of the hall was manned by two enlisted sailors and a lieutenant, all three of whom snapped to attention with the Admiral's appearance. The Admiral looked the officer in the eye. "Take a break, Lieutenant. Take your men with you." The order was so unorthodox that it took a moment before the lieutenant could process it. "Yes, sir," he said finally. The men left their post and entered the elevator. Once the doors had shut, the Admiral moved behind their desk, where he began flicking through a series of switches. "Shutting off the cameras," he told Rudy. "Can't have a record of this remaining after we're gone." With the surveillance system shut down, the Admiral took Rudy to another desk before disappearing into a labyrinth walled with numbered and locked cabinets. He returned with a metallic container, sealed with rubber around the edges. "I've looked at this record several times myself over the last week. I should have destroyed it. But perhaps it's best someone like you sees it. You'll understand." Rudy nodded. "What I'm about to show you cannot be spoken about outside this room," the Admiral added. "Not without doing irreparable damage to my nation. I hope you understand that." Rudy nodded. "You have my word that I'll keep the information to myself, and that anything we do use will not be sourced back to you or Israel." The Admiral opened the container and pulled out several envelopes made of a fireproof material. "The program was known here as Jericho," he said, breaking the seal on the first envelope. "I'm not sure what the French called their portion. Probably Joan of Arc or something. The idea was dreamt up in 1965 and launched early the next year. As you've already surmised, it was a biological weapon designed to eat oil and create dangerous waste products. Was the plan to use it as a deterrent?" The Admiral nodded. "The Arab nations seemed willing to sacrifice untold numbers of lives to destroy Israel. By 68, they'd already attacked us three times. Despite heavy losses in each war, they simply retreated and rearmed, using oil money to rebuild their forces. Our leaders knew something had to be done or they'd overwhelm us. Some wanted nuclear weapons, which they eventually got. But others wanted a weapon that would render the threat moot without obliterating cities and killing millions. A panel of our scientists suggested genetically engineering a strain of bacteria that would take their wealth away from them before they ever pulled it out of the ground. They obviously succeeded." "Not at first," Natal admitted. "Genetic engineering was in its infancy back then. What could and could not be done were complete unknowns. After a year with little progress, we were at an impasse. The problem was expertise and equipment. The French had both, and they had already helped us develop our nuclear reactors. Indeed, in the early days, the French were one of our strongest allies."
"So you made a deal?"
Natal nodded. "The joint operation was undertaken. Two teams would work on the project, one from Israel and one from France. They were sent to the island of Yaros in the Aegean."
"Why there?" Rudy said. "Yaros is neither Israeli nor French."
"You've answered your own question, my friend. It belonged to neither country, but is barren, uninhabited, and not worth a visit from anyone. It served as a neutral spot, not quite halfway between our nations."
"Trust was already an issue," Rudy said.
"Isn't it always?" the Admiral said. Rudy didn't respond, but said, "What happened?"
"The first year was uneventful, but productive. The second year brought us stunning success, including several strains of bacteria that could live in the heat and pressure of the oil fields. We found the strongest and most voracious and crossed it with another strain of bacteria that consumes hydrocarbons. similar to the bacteria they use when trying to break down oil spills today. The results were spectacular. When the bacteria were exposed to crude oil, it grew at a phenomenal rate. It also produced a highly viscous sludge that acted to seal the wells, blocking them up like caulk. A final byproduct was an explosive gas that, once released, would react instantly with air or water. My people have seen it in action. For that, you have my apologies, the Admiral said. At any rate, with success comes greed, and the partner of greed is fear. From the French side, Rudy presumed. Natal nodded. By then, France was becoming dependent on Arab oil, and as a result, becoming less and less interested in a friendship with Israel. After the early success, they demanded that we work on a method to kill the bacteria, the very antidote you've come to ask about. And? It was developed, the Admiral insisted, and its creation and successful testing brought a quick end to things on Yaros. As soon as the counteragent had been proven to work, a chill descended over the island. Our people realized that the weapon itself would be useless if the French could counteract it, while the French realized that we might wish to destroy the counteragent or to take complete control of it ourselves. Ultimately, they acted before we did, taking everything they could carry and destroying the rest. The facts don't support that, Rudy said. If the French took everything, how did the oil destroyer and a group of French sailors end up on the Dakar at the bottom of the Mediterranean? I said they took it. I didn't say they got it home. The French sent a submarine to Yaros with a squad of heavily armed commandos on board. They massacred most of our scientific staff and took everything they could carry. They destroyed what remained with explosives and kerosene. All the equipment, all the records, everything. The Admiral took a breath and continued. We learned of the treachery within 12 hours, but it was too late to give chase. The French were out of range the moment they left the island. With several hundred miles between them and our nearest warship, we could neither stop them nor threaten them. They were home free. Or so they thought. Rudy was starting to see the picture. But the Dakar was coming in from the other direction, from the UK via Gibraltar. It was in position to cut them off. It was, Natal admitted. We ordered it to intercept the French boat and spent the next several days broadcasting fake position reports while maneuvering the Dakar to a station between the French sub and their home port. How did you know where to wait? We suspected their vessel would make for the submarine base at Toulon. It was a calculated risk, but it made the most sense. Now all we had to do was wait. For the next 2 days, a debate raged at the highest levels of government as to whether we should sink the French submarine or not. Some felt that that would be an act of war and that we should avoid antagonizing the French. Others pointed out that the murder of Israeli scientists and the theft of our labor was already an act of war. Finally, one voice clarified things for everyone, pointing out that while the French were unlikely to go to war with us over something they would have had a hard time explaining to the rest of the world, history suggested that the Arabs would most certainly attack us again in due time. That being the case, it meant that neither the submarine nor the scientists' lives nor relations with France were as relevant to Israel as the research material itself. The bacterial cultures and genetic codes were what mattered. Destroying the French submarine would be a wasteful act. Allowing it to reach France would be an act of cowardice. We needed to get the materials back, and there was only one way to do that. The crew of the Dakar had to stop the French submarine without sinking it, boarding the vessel once it surfaced and taking it by force. Rudy could scarcely believe what he was hearing. Is that what happened? That's how it began, the Admiral said, handing over the second of the sealed envelopes. Read for yourself. You'll see how it ended. Rudy opened the envelope and found that it contained dispatches from the INS Dakar. 27 January 1968, 0640 hours. Target located. Tracking. Expect target to surface prior to entering port. 27 January 1968, 0755 hours. Intercepted coded message. Decryption indicates target will not surface until it enters channel. By that point, we would be exposed to French radar and hostile vessels. Action would be impossible. Attempting to ram target vessels, snorkel, and force them to the surface. 27 January 1968, 0819 hours. French vessel boarded and subdued. 3 casualties. Due to mounting threat of detection by French Air Force and the nature of contraband cargo, we have only been able to retrieve Objective Alpha. Objective Bravo remains on the French submarine. Executive decision has been made to divide the crew and sail captured vessel back to Haifa, releasing debris as countermeasure to convince the French that she foundered. With luck, they will conduct search and rescue operations for days and never learn that we've taken her. They took the French sub as a prize, Rudy questioned. Am I reading this right? They couldn't leave her afloat to call for support, the admiral said, and considering the weather and time constraints, they couldn't transfer the entire crew or all the materials. The only other option would have been sending her to the bottom, but that would have been murder. Rudy understood. There was a difference between acting in combat and killing prisoners. It was a line professional military men would not cross. Rudy envisioned the situation. 2 submarines headed for Haifa, he said, each with a divided crew, each carrying some portion of the bacterial cultures on board. How could they not expect an uprising on one ship or both? There were clashes, Natal admitted. The captain's logbook, which we recovered from the Dakar, stated there were 2 attempts by French sailors to escape when the sub was surfaced briefly, and 1 attempt to take the boat by force while running submerged. 1 Israeli sailor died. 3 French sailors were wounded. But the voyage continued. Not long enough, apparently. No, the admiral said, and it did not end satisfactorily for anyone. He gave Rudy the last envelope. Inside were scribbled notes. They were almost unreadable. Written in the dark, the admiral explained, after all power was lost. The words are in French. The next pages are a typewritten English translation. Rudy switched from the scribbled writings to the orderly translation and went through it slowly, reading aloud as he went. The engine room is flooded to the midpoint. We are dead in the water, bow pointed toward a surface we will never again reach. The Israeli captain has given us permission to write our families, to say our goodbyes. But I wish only to commend him. He has treated us fairly. The governments of the world have their wars, but men of the sea are brothers, and we are brothers who shall die together. Rudy looked up at Natal and then turned the page. This is from a French sailor. The admiral nodded. The boat is sinking slowly, so slowly that we must be at almost neutral buoyancy. It has been hours, and will be hours more before we are crushed. And yet, still they circle above us, angry wasps waiting to land one more sting. Occasionally we hear another depth charge hit the water, and then all we can do is wait. Most of us would welcome a direct hit to end things quickly. But they must not know how far down we've drifted. The detonations are so far above us. Do they know they're killing their own? I wonder. There was 1 more page. Rudy turned to it quickly. It has been 11 hours. We are past the boat's test depth and the hull is creaking. Each groan seems like the hand of death, stroking our vessel in search of a weak point to crush it. There is no light and nothing to breathe except poisoned air. It stinks of oil and sweat and filth. The carbon dioxide is so thick that many of the men have fallen asleep already. In a way, I envy them. Others have gone forward in hopes of getting out through the torpedo tubes, but their attempt is for naught. We are too deep. They will be crushed if they succeed at all. At least they have their vain hope. I have none, except that perhaps those in the other boat will make it to port, that those members of my crew and the Israeli sailors who were with them will survive to see their families again. The narrative ended there, followed by the name of the officer, which had been blacked out. The next lines of text told Rudy enough about the author to send a chill down his spine. Honor, homeland, valor, discipline. Vive la France. Vive la Minerve. Rudy looked at the admiral. The captured French submarine was the Minerve? You see why I can't help you, the admiral said. The French took the research data, the genetic materials and the bacterial cultures from the island. Our people took half of it back and left the rest on the Minerve. Both sailed for Israel, but neither ship survived. Rudy understood the task ahead instantly and clearly. If the materials we're looking for weren't on the Dakar, they have to be on the Minerve. It would appear that way, the admiral said. But the French have been looking for that ship since the day she vanished. The search has gone on for 2 decades longer than our own search for the Dakar. I assure you, in all that time, they haven't found a trace of it. Nor have we. That might play to our advantage, Rudy said. If they haven't been able to find it, that means they didn't sink it. It means the material on board stands a decent chance of remaining intact. You're right, of course, the admiral said, but the Mediterranean is a big place. What makes you think you'll be able to find it when both we and the French have been unable to do so? Because I have to,